Accession number 7472, Real 2.
Colonel Noble, Real 2.
They were strung out along this track behind the battle area very early in the morning, soon after daybreak. A cavalry charge emerged from the scrub to the north of this track, and the equivalent, I suppose, of 40 or 50 native troops on scruffy ponies arrived on the scene and charged down onto the track and the gun lines and the lot. I suppose they probably had about 400 yards or so to go, but it, of course, in this case, the early morning, it was a complete surprise. The guns, who were all pointing forwards, had to turn their round through 90 degrees and fire whatever they had up the spout at this cavalry. Everybody leapt into slip trenches and fired everything they could get. The unfortunate cavalry charge, of course, disintegrated, and there was a most fearful slaughter. But it was probably one of the very last cavalry charges as such to be recorded. I think there was another one somewhere else during the war. But this, shall we say, was probably the last, and really showed that against modern weapons, this form of cavalry, it was real murder. The Indian, as it were, the Italian officer who led this charge was killed, but posthumously was given a gold medal for gallantry by the Italian army. But there's an interesting follow-up in that a great many years afterwards, our divisional association fetched up with the officer of the day, who was a regular Italian cavalry officer who was in charge of these units, although he didn't take charge, a part in the charge himself, came to light as the Italian ambassador in India around about, I think, about the 1960s. His name was Amadeo Juillet, Juillet, and after retiring from India, he came over to this part of the world and settled in the south of Ireland. It was intriguing in that at one of our annual dinners, we invited him as a guest together with the Brigadier of the 11th Brigade, whose units he had charged on that day. They sat together at dinner, which was a somewhat unusual and happy occasion, rather happier than the original one. Quite a coincidence. I don't know whether he's still alive. However, that charge being dispelled, eventually the Italians, colonial troops, removed themselves again from the heights overlooking Keru, and encouraged by a brigade from the 5th Indian, remembering that they are coming along the road, the what used to be called the Strada Imperiale, the main road, they had come up behind this position through another track that they had found, and were cutting off the Italians' withdrawal from the Cairo position. In point of fact, they managed it so successfully that the whole of that brigade of colonial troops was put in the bag, including the brigadier and his staff, and as such, it never fought again. Well, to get Gazelle on the move again from Cairo took a bit of doing, because these mines had to be removed and there were demolitions in the gorge between the mountains through which the track went. But eventually this was achieved, and off they went again, heading for the next place of importance on their route forward, which is Gordat. They found a position roughly on the same sort of lines as Cairo, astride the track, a highish ridge which gave you the observation all the way across the approaches to Gordat, and which had been fortified previously. They found difficulty in getting round to the north because of the nature of the ground, very rough and scrubby, and trees and the rest of it, including a dried up riverbed. But they found it was easier to the south, where there was a fairly wide open plain, I suppose about a mile across, but finishing in the south by a massive mountain which appeared to stretch quite a long way inland. And of course, if you sat up in that mountain, you saw exactly what was happening on the plain below you. And the Italians, of course, knew this rather better than we did at that stage. Well, around about this time, of course, the poor old infantry were still marching away on their feet, still having disposed of the Cairo position. They then were marching on towards Gordat. I think at this stage there was a certain element of transport which had dumped its loads and was picking up companies and moving them on in a sort of, giving them a lift, so to speak, and then going back and lifting others, so to give them a bit of a rest. I think it's amusing perhaps here to relate that my old regiment, and battalion, the 2nd Battalion, Cameron Highlanders, they were very short of reinforcements after the Battle of Sidi Barani. Shall we say proper ones, jocks. And so they had to be made up from reinforcements who originally come out for other units. And so here, for the first time, men from Leicester and other regiments, basically, in that part of the world, were drafted in to the Cameron Highlanders, into that battalion. As a result of which, we were given the nickname of the London, Midland and Scottish, which remained with us for a time. I must say, there were some really remarkably fine chaps among these reinforcements, who certainly, within a very short time, I reckoned they were as good a jock as anybody else, although none of them had ever put a kilt on. That was to come later, perhaps. So that's a little bit of a sideline. So we've left really Gazelle force trying to get round the approaches to the small town of Gordat, and finding out which is the best way to go about to proceed, because the road out of Gaudat, the main road or the continuation of the track out of Gaudat, actually, instead of continuing due east, actually came down south, because it had to go through another gorge and the hills before crossing this dried up riverbed which I mentioned earlier. Well, this was unfortunate for the Italians who, in defending defending Gaudat, because it made it rather easier and quicker for us to cut in behind them and cut that road and their withdrawal route, because otherwise they would have to withdraw on foot through the very rough country and leave all their kit, guns and things behind, which eventually they had to do. So it was decided that we should have the 4th Indian would have a go at the on the south side through this open plain, but it was also considered that we ought to climb up this mountain at the south end, Mount Cochen, C-O-C-H-E-N, because we couldn't afford to leave the Italians sitting up there, and with the with the ability to shell us and see every move. So at this time, the 2nd Brigade, the 5th Indian Brigade, had arrived and had made its way up gradually, much of it on its feet, behind the 11th Brigade, en route from Castler, and was now ready for battle. It was supposed to have had some time, poor dears, to after its arrival, to settle in and get shaped up. But in point of fact, it never stopped. It came down the river and then made its way straight on into battle. However, part of it was to fight in the plain, and part of 11th Brigade was to go down and up this mountain on the right. The main route that we've been following and where we've been held up were by this mountain position across the way between us and the Gaudat was held by Gazelle Force for the time being. The main thrust had gone round to the south and to the right. Well, those who are up on Mount Cochin had an extremely difficult time and a very worrying time indeed. Because, as you probably realize, in this mountain area, we, the 4th Indian Division, having come from Egypt, were not ready for mountain warfare in any form whatsoever. You do need mules and such like to carry your ammunition, rations, and all the rest of it up there. And so, the two battalions that were sent up there, each battalion was less one company who were the carriers, who had to carry the ammunition up and the rations and so on and carry the casualties down. And so they were definitely thin on the ground. The Italians deployed two complete colonial battalions up there. And in a night attack, they really had the Indian battalions really had a very difficult time indeed. However, it managed to, shall we say, hold its own there. Even the sappers company up there had to down their tools and use their bayonets on one occasion. But eventually the Italians moved back, withdrew, and meantime, while this was going on up there, way above their heads, the remaining two battalions, the Camerons and the Rajputana Rifles, were clearing the lower slopes of this great big hill. On their left, a brigade attack was being launched by this 5th Brigade, right the way down the middle of the plain. They got held up on an anti-tank ditch which stretched right across the plain. About meantime, the Camerons and Rajputana rifles had progressed further forward on the lower slopes of this mountain. It was here that eventually the Italian armor showed itself. I think there were about a dozen or so, what they used to call in those days medium tanks, and a half a dozen of these miserable two men tanks, who were absolute death traps. And some of them were, especially the bigger tanks, the medium ones, were manned by the crews, we discovered afterwards, the crews of German ships who had been interned or in Messiah Harbour and wanted to play a part. However, at this stage I must point out that we weren't completely without armour. The infantry tank had proved its worth at Siriburani, the Matilda as it latterly became called, and a troop, six tanks I think, were allotted to these two divisions. It's hardly tank country this, in the mountains, but they were allotted to this. And when it was, they, of course, had to make their way very slowly and steadily up in the rear along these tracks. And, of course, the fuel supply was a distinct problem. But they managed to get them there. Of course, the moment came when the Italian tanks showed themselves. At Siriburani, the Matilda's two-pounder had proved more than enough for the armour of any of the Italian tanks. Went through them like butter. And so when this packet of tanks was discovered lurking somewhere near the escape road, infantry tanks were lined up or got together. The carriers, platoons, of the 2nd Camerons. This little force was put in the command of the second-in-command of the Camerons, one Major Colin Duncan, who took up his position in one of the I-tanks, one of the Matildas. And off they set, with the carriers going in front as a bait. And these unfortunate Italian tanks arrived. They emerged, seeing the carriers and not seeing the other tanks. And, of course, were then mown down into small pieces by the I-tanks. It was really a bit of a murderous performance, but that was the end of the Italian armour, as far as that was concerned. Well, that brought the attacking infantry and tanks to the edge of the escape road, and that finished off the Italian forces in the Agordat area. Those that could escape are dead across country, leaving their heavy equipment. The stocks of guns, derelict tanks, weapons and so on that have been discarded there is really quite fantastic. However, that is a very brief picture of what happened at Agordat. Meantime, just to keep the picture straight, the 5th Indian Division were having a similar type of battle down further south at a place called Barentu. I won't go into any detail there. A, I wasn't there, and B, I'm not awfully aware of what actually did happen, but they had had quite a tussle there before they cleared that up. So, I haven't talked at all about the administrative problems, but I expect you can imagine what they were like with an LFC By this time, to Gaudet, I suppose, the best part of 60 miles from Kassler, or perhaps more. Of course, everything to be brought by road. We had some South African, I don't know quite where they came from or how, I suspect they came from Kenya, transport companies, who worked day and night to ferry forward ammunition, rations, everything we needed. And without them, I don't think the two divisions could have possibly have maintained their effort. But there's a very, very long carry, as you can imagine. Right, well now, can we pause for a minute? The night after the battle was over, the divisional headquarters spent it in the Italian part of the small town of Agordat, in one or two quite modern Italian houses. All I can remember is that they were completely, they had been pillaged completely by the locals as soon as their owners had disappeared into the bush and escaped, and the place was absolutely full of bugs and beetles and so on, and was eaten to death that night. In fact, we all preferred to sleep outside rather than in these houses. Well, again, moving on, the Gazelle in the lead once more, continuing now down the main road, the Strada Imperiale to Keren. And now it was the 4th Division in the lead, and the 5th Division was resting, as it was not possible at that stage to maintain two divisions forward until supplies and things had been built up. So, 4th Division following on, as usual, behind Gazelle. The first problem that Gazelle met was the crossing of the River Baraka, Baraka, which I mentioned earlier, at this time of year was a dried up bed. And across the river, the road was taken by a modern steel bridge, which had been called the Ponte Mussolini. The Italian sappers had done their best to destroy it, not very successfully, but they had made it impossible for wheeled transport. In other words, it was still standing, but it was not up to any weight. So it meant that everybody and every vehicle had to cross the dried-up wadi bed, the river bed. And this was soon found to be strewn liberally with mines. And, of course, until the sappers could remove those, there was a considerable time lag while the Gazelle waited impatiently on the banks. However, this gave the Italians time to get away from Agordat, and also further time, although we didn't realize it at the time, for them to reorganize or organize again the defenses of Keren, of course, of which we at the moment knew very little, as we hadn't got there yet. They had brought up, they decided that this, the Italians had decided that this would Keren would be the major defensive position in Eritrea, covering Asmara and Musar. And they had produced, I think it was two battalions or three battalions of regular Italian soldiers who were the bodyguard of the governor of, in fact, I suppose it was the Duke of Aosta in Addis. And these battalions of Savoia Grenadiers and Alpini were brought up in by truck all the way from Addis, absolutely flat out, motoring day and night to help man the defences of Caron. And they proved in the end a very great stumbling block to 4th Indian in our endeavours to get through them. It just gave them sufficient time to get these number one troops up from Addis and man the defences before we in the 4th Indian arrived in front of them. I don't think it's probably worthwhile to try and explain to you what the countryside round Caron looks like, because doubtless you'll have found it out from other sources. But to the west of Caron is a long and high, shall we say, half moon of hills, and only one gorge through the middle of them, through which the Strada ran, and it was the obvious major way into the town of Caron. Caron itself sits in a little plain, completely surrounded by these hills. I suppose one really ought to call them mountains. Sitting on the tops of these mountains, or basically just behind the top, behind the summits, where these Italian infantry, normally tucked away out of sight and clear of shell bursts from our guns. They only came out when the guns stopped firing, because that was the moment that the attacking infantry were just about to reach the summit. Then they poured out, and apart from firing rifles and so on, they poured a hail of their little, what we called red grenades, down on the attacking infantry. Now, the attacking infantry really had a hell of a time to get where they did get up to those heights. They had to come down first from a particular ridge, which I have some more to say in a moment, and then climb up, often on all fours, not necessarily on rock, but on scrub and dried earth and the like, very slippery stuff, in order to get to the top. And of course, if you've got your enemy sitting on the top looking down on you and chucking these grenades at you, you're in a very poor position, because the gunners could do nothing for you at that stage. If they did, they would probably have hit you, and otherwise their shells would have gone straight over the top. So this is really what happened in the early stages of the attacks on the heights at Caron. But I'm going on a little farther, perhaps a little too far ahead at this stage. Well, Gazelle moved on and eventually came up to this gorge between the mountains surrounding the western side of Caron, and found that the Italians' engineers had time to demolish the road through the gorge, and they'd pulled a large bit of the surrounding cliffs down on the road, and it was quite impossible for any vehicle, tank or anything else to get by. They'd also got it covered with some of their anti-tank guns. So there we were. And of course Gazelle again wandered round to see what it, if there's any other way around. And there was a big valley to the right of the road, which eventually